Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. It's a foot race, and Crowder is in there! A 69-yard touchdown.
Takes a shot, hands Corey Davis wide open. Davis still going, and he's in for the touchdown.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know that's
the Q-inator.
Oh my gosh!
Listen, thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And we are taking a look back at the past decade and some of the juicier stories that went down, taking an inside look because it is that period right now between the end of minicamp and the beginning of training camp. We got a month and a half, and I thought it would be fun to look at some of the stories that were some of the more salacious and more entertaining that went on behind the scenes. And of course, to do that with us, somebody who was in the locker room for all of it, the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. And Chris, today we are going to look back at something that actually produced a really awesome term. And we're calling this episode The Birth of the Usurper in honor of Peter J. Dillard, who came up with the term. And that's what I mean. The story we're going to tell you ends up tragically because it results in Adam Gase having total authority, at least temporarily. However, it did give birth to the term usurper. And Chris, every time I use it, you giggle like a schoolgirl. So if nothing else, we got that out of the deal.
That's good enough. You get something that gold out of a deal and sign me up for it 10 times out of 10. Listen, I've seen a lot of things go wrong here with the Jets. Very few things come out with such an awesome story as this. We were joking about it a week or two leaving practice after OTAs, just kind of just admiring what he did. He came in here and pulled a Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones right away, got the GM fired, got his guy in there, and then, you know, he just forgot that he doesn't know how to coach, and so he was out the door fairly quickly afterwards. But the whole thing, I mean, it was just hilarious, just because first you got to think about going back to just when his name, Adam Gase's name, first got mentioned as a candidate for coach. And like, 80%, what do you think? 80%, 90% of Jet fans were like, this is a bad idea. Before he even got in for an interview, people were like, this is a bad idea. But then people weren't even really too worried about it because they just figured he was just getting an interview. But then it made quickly apparent that, like, no, he's a favorite. Oh, my God, they're going to actually give him a job. And then he hadn't even had a chance to do anything yet. And then there's the reports surfacing around the draft about him getting McCagnan fired and all this stuff. And I mean, we have an interesting story about the day that it broke, how it all played out exactly. But it was just absolutely hilarious. Just the twists and turns that this story took in such a short time and the dramatic leaps it was taking. And then all just to end up with just Adam Gase going 2-14, having an awful season and getting run out of here. There's a lot of meat on the bone in this story for us to talk about.
No question about it. And I can't believe it was only a few years ago. It feels like a lifetime ago. So we know that Adam Gase ends up getting hired. You know the backstory there. The Jets did the coaching search. I was stumping for either Todd Monken or Matt Rhule, and it almost happened. One of the two of them, in fact, both of them almost ended up here because the Jets had gotten close with Matt Rhule, but they weren't comfortable with his choice for offensive coordinator. They wanted him to pick from a list of guys, and one of the suggested names was Todd Monken. Matt Rhule did not want the Jets dictating his coaching staff, so he decided he was going to stay at Baylor, and it came down to Adam Gase and Todd Monken. I still can't believe they picked Adam Gase over Todd Monken, but they did. So Gase becomes the new head coach. The theory here, of course, at the time is that he's going to be good with Sam Darnold, the perfect quarterback whisperer. Look at all the work he did with Peyton Manning. Because, you know, Chris, before Gase showed up, that Peyton Manning guy, he was kind of a bust. He hadn't really done anything in the NFL. And Gase brought him to a whole new level in Denver. It's not like he had a whole career in Indianapolis or anything before he ended up with Gase in Denver. So Gase comes in here, and that's the theory, that he is going to work with Mike Maccagnan, build some weapons around Darnold. Darnold will be taken to the next level, and the Jets will be on their way. The story takes a huge turn when we get to right around the draft, when a story broke. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about Mike Maccagnan. Now, Chris, I remember you telling me that a big part of the reason that Mike Maccagnan was able to get away with being as incompetent as he was is because he was so nice to the press. And I know that he used to talk to you guys and call on you by name. He didn't do a lot of press conferences from what I remember, but when he did, he was polite and he would be able to spin out of different answers. And I remember the end of the year press conference, you and I taped a show recapping what Maccagnan had said. And before that press conference, I was talking to Daryl Slater. And the reason that I really like Daryl is because he's somebody that cuts right through the mustard. A lot like you, Chris. You guys are very similar in that way, where Daryl can see through the BS. And so I was talking to him before that presser, and I said, Daryl, please, you've got to be the one to hold Mike Maccagnan's feet to the fire here, because nobody else is going to do it. Chris, I know that you had told me numerous times that if you get too confrontational, unlike somebody at the Daily News or the Post or one of the bigger outlets, you're afraid that they're going to try and retaliate against you. So you weren't going to be able to ask those questions. But somebody at a legacy media outlet, different story. And Daryl said to me, I try all the time, but he always spins out of it. I'm like, Daryl, please, you've got to hold his feet to the fire. Nobody else is going to do it. And I remember after the press conference ended, you shot me a text, Chris, and you said, I don't know what got into your boy Daryl today, but he was on fire.
Yeah, I remember that. I forgot about it, but now that you say it, I remember it. Yeah.
And then you said to me, go watch the press conference. You'll see what I'm talking about. And Daryl asked a question to Mike Maccagnan about whether or not he felt his poor drafting was a big part of the reason why the Jets were in the position they were in. And Maccagnan sort of spun and talked about, oh, look at the Rams. You know, for years they had problems, and then look at where they are now. And Daryl was ready for that. He came right back at Maccagnan, threw it in his face. He said, yeah, except the problem is when the Rams were building, they had all these good players. He listed Aaron Donald and all these other guys that they were building on the roster, even if they weren't having good records. And then Daryl said, you don't have any players that are of this caliber, nobody even close. How do you expect to build a winner even once you get a quarterback? And Maccagnan kind of sputtered and then just deflected and went on to the next question. But I really was happy with the fact that Darryl was able to hold his feet to the fire that way, even if Maccagnan did eventually spin out of it in a way that hadn't been done before, because Maccagnan, I felt, had gotten away with a lot. Todd Bowles took all of the criticism, and listen, he deserved plenty of it. He was a terrible coach when he was here, but it didn't seem like enough fire was being thrown in McCagnan's face for all the terrible drafting and all the terrible roster decisions that he had made. And finally, we started to get a little bit of that with Darryl asking those questions. And then Chris, of course, we figured, okay, if this doesn't work out this year, Maccagnan will probably be on the hot seat. But at least here, we're starting to see people opening up their eyes to how bad of a job Maccagnan had done. We weren't thinking that this was going to lead to his downfall a couple of months later, but it turned out to sort of be the precursor to everything that would happen with the birth of the usurper.
Oh, it absolutely was the precursor there. The whole thing is funny because we'll start with Maccagnan, and I, whenever he would have these pressers, I would always point out, like, get ready for Maccagnan to say a whole bunch of nothing. But like, and then people would, fans would get upset with me. Like I was criticizing him for that. And that's what Mike Maccagnan was best at. Like, that is not a criticism. That is a compliment of him, because that is a GM's job. A GM's job is to not tell us reporters anything, but there's an art to it. You have, because you can't just come out and not give anything at all, because then you're going to get peppered with responses. The key, the trick to it is that you have to say something that sounds like you're saying something, and you have to be charming and engaging enough that the people you're talking to don't realize that you're just really rambling a bunch of word salad that doesn't actually have any meaning. It sounds good in the moment, but if you actually dissect it, there's nothing there. And that is what a good GM is supposed to do with the media. But so there will be, you know, you mentioned the former Daily News guy who would go at him. But see, I'm not typically a reporter that likes to do a lot of pushback on this. And part of that is just because I'm sitting here going, we're talking about football. Like, I'm not talking about some huge, like, human rights violation scandals or something. Like, if you don't want to give me a straight answer about football, all right. And the other thing is, I am not, I tend to get a little emotional about things sometimes. So if I feel that I'm asking a question and being met with like a dismissive answer or something, that I'll feel like a little insulted, and then I'll respond in a more similar way to the former Daily News guy than Darryl. Like, I'll get a little emotional in it, and then my responses won't be exactly what I want. But I do remember sitting there and Darryl asked the first question, and I was like, yeah, good question. And then he came back and I was just like, oh man, he got it. Like, he nailed it. The way he got the answer out there, or the question out there, and to pinpoint and be like, yeah, but you're not like the Rams at all. And he did it with sounding perfectly reasonable. And that's where you really started to see some cracks start to show right there. And then, of course, how everything ended up unfolding with where nobody was talking about it. Everyone had just assumed they just hired Adam Gase. There's no way that you're going to fire the GM that just hired him. Like, they haven't even played a game yet. And then that just spiraled so, so fast, so quickly. Again, this how that unfolds, that this all started during the draft. And I forget which, I think it might've been Endgame. It was one of the Avengers movies. So it was the Friday after the first round of the draft happened. And one of the Avenger movies was just coming out, and I was like, I have to go see this in the morning because I have to be on Twitter all weekend. I'm going to see spoilers. I have to go see it. And I'm sitting there in the movie. I watch the whole 3-hour whatever movie, and I come out and there's a text from you. This text from you asking me about, I forget what you said. You were asking me just what's going on with this McCagnan thing, I think is what you said.
Yeah, I texted you because there were reports by Tony Pauline and Mike Lombardi saying that Mike McCagnan was in trouble and that he might be ousted very soon. So I texted you and said, what's going on here? Do you know anything? And you called me when you got out of the movie theater and you said, what are you talking about? And then I explained to you what was going on with the reports. And you immediately said, sounds like a power play. Let me go have a slice and a Coke, and then I'll make some phone calls and see what I can find out. And then you called me back a few hours later, and you said, yeah, it's a power play.
Yeah, okay, so I remember getting the text, and it was something along the lines of, like, what's going on with this McCagnan stuff? And again, I woke up, I had a quick breakfast, and I went to the movies. So, like, I hadn't got on Twitter, I wasn't paying any attention, but the first round of the draft was just the night before. They're getting ready for round two of the draft. I'm not thinking about any McCagnan thing. Like, that's a McCagnan thing. Is the only McCagnan thing I'm thinking about is who's he going to draft later that night. So I was like, what are you talking about? And then I remember that I called you, and I was just like, I was like, all right. I mean, I don't know where any of this is coming from. I was like, I don't know if there's anything to this, but if there is, this sounds like it's a power play. And then, yeah, I started making calls. I was like, when I hung up the phone with you, I wasn't really thinking that there was anything there. I was just like, all right, this still seems weird. Like, I don't know. This doesn't seem legit. Oh, I went, I got some lunch. I started making some texts, making some phone calls. And then I talked to people, and like, people that I would talk to were like, oh yeah, this is a thing. This is happening. We're not sure when it's going to happen, how soon it's going to happen, but yeah, his time is up. He's being pushed out already. And I'm like, but it's like, the draft is happening now. What are you talking about? The GM is being pushed out in the middle of the draft. And they're like, well, yeah, he's obviously not going to get fired later today. They're going to let him do out the draft. And then there was a point where I had thought that they might have let him play out the season. But it was at that point when I made calls, everyone said, yeah, he's done. Like, it's just a matter of when it's actually going to happen. And then, of course, I come out and I tweet it out. And then a bunch of people take issue with me saying that. A lot of fans who still wanted to defend McCagnan for some unknown reason. And then, of course, most of the beat was very confident that nothing was going to happen to McCagnan. The one reporter came out and said, absolutely 0% chance that this is happening. It's all bullshit made up. Other reporters were saying there's nothing to this. And then I was just left alone on an island out there saying, no, there's something happened here for a while. And then the news finally came some weeks later, and the move was made. It happened a little earlier than at that point, I thought it would go a little bit longer. But, and then, you know, when it did happen, I had a little bit of vindication there because everybody said, nope, definitely not happening. And no, well, it definitely did happen.
People actually accused you of trying to sow seeds of division, if I recall correctly. Yeah. And if we're going to be fair about it, Chris, we can't just give you the credit for going against the grain. Rich Simini did as well, and he took a lot of abuse, too. He came out and said a lot of the same stuff that you said, that he'd been hearing that there was a power play behind the scenes and that Gase was basically trying to shove McCagnan out, which is what ended up happening. And if I recall correctly, the story here is that Gase got in there, figured he'd work with McCagnan, but very quickly realized that McCagnan had no idea what he was doing. And if he was going to hitch his wagon to McCagnan, he was screwed. He had no chance to succeed. So his only shot was to get McCagnan out of here and get him out of here ASAP. This all started with a variety of different discussions and disagreements between the two. I think Le'Veon Bell was part of it, although I know ownership wanted Le'Veon Bell. Gase, as we know, wanted nothing to do with Le'Veon Bell. And then you find out that he was actually in the owner's ear, not only saying that McCagnan had to go, but pitching specific people, especially Joe Douglas, somebody that he knew from his time with the Chicago Bears. So talk to me a little bit about what the crux of that particular part of the story was. Adam Gase becoming the usurper and deciding not only that McCagnan had to go, but that he had to put this effort into overdrive.
Yeah, so that was one of the interesting things about it, too, because, again, McKagan and Christopher Johnson had just hired Adam Gase. They come into this situation, and it was basically that. Now, I didn't find this out at the time, because this is another thing that I'll just quick aside here is the reason why I found out that McKagan was in trouble. I didn't find out from anybody talking with the Jets, and I purposely didn't really try talking to anybody with the Jets on this, because with moves like that, whether it's true or not, they're not going to tell you, but they're not going to tell a Jet beat reporter that information before they're ready for that information to get out. It's just not going to happen. So what I try to do is, you all, if you pay attention to stories, you'll see a lot of times league sources said this. League sources said this. A lot of times what that means is that somebody from another team said this. And other teams will know what's going on better than even sometimes people in that Jets building. Like, there were people in the Jets building who I think probably didn't know that McKagan was toast before there were people in the Giants, the Eagles, all these other teams. They knew it. That stuff gets around because, you know, teams start, coaches and owners start making calls to other teams to see about the next step forward, because teams don't ever say, okay, let's fire a guy as the first move, then start our, you know, process to find the new guy. No, they always start the process to find the new guy first. They always do. And so all the teams around the league will get that information before some people in that building do. That's typically how that works. So I got the information from sources on other teams. And then I had it confirmed from multiple people, and they're like, yeah, this is going to happen. And then, so at that time, when I first had it, I had no idea what it was. Now, of course, I was sitting there saying it's deserving. Mike McKagan has not done a good job to stay. He doesn't deserve to stay for any reason. But then it slowly became apparent that, and this is all the things I can criticize Adam Gase for, which is basically everything about him except for the way he was with us media. He was great talking to us one-on-one. But pretty much everything else about Adam Gase was bad, except for this. He correctly identified that Mike McKagan is not to be a GM in this league. And it really wasn't that he got hired and was like, all right, first thing I'm doing is driving this GM out of here. It was, no, they were sitting there talking about stuff and talking about players and what they want to do, roster building. And Adam Gase was just like, this is not going to work. This guy does not know what he's doing, which is, for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing themselves, for him to be able to correctly identify that Mike McKagan didn't know what he was doing is kind of impressive. You would think it would take somebody who knew what they were doing at least a little bit to identify that McKagan didn't know what they were doing. But Gase didn't know what he was doing, but he knew enough to know that McKagan didn't know what he was doing, who didn't know enough to know that Adam Gase didn't know what he was doing. So this is a real, real back and forth here of a whole lot of no one knowing what's going on. But Adam Gase knows that Mike McKagan is not the guy to help him. And Mike McKagan also, at first, doesn't know that Adam Gase is working to try to get him fired. And then, obviously, he learns this along the way, because this is not – like, Mike McKagan knew he was getting fired before he got fired. It wasn't a surprise to him at that time. There was a couple weeks there – where he wasn't sure, but then eventually he started hearing, and once he was finally told, he knew, he had heard. But yeah, again, it's just hilarious to me that the only thing where Adam Gase knew what he was doing was that Mike McKagan didn't know what he was doing.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Of course, the Jets would be the team that would fire a guy after letting him spend a ton of money in free agency and run an NFL draft, where the Jets, by the way, had the number 3 overall pick. Only the Jets would do something like that. Of course, we all said that he should have been fired with Todd Bowles at the end of the season. We recognized it wasn't going to happen, but then it does happen after all of that. And so let's get to that point in the story, which is we find out a few weeks after the draft that McCagnan has been fired. I remember I was talking to Daryl Slater, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, he stops and he says, "Oh, crap, I got to go." And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Mike McCagnan just got fired." So I said, "All right, go do your story or whatever it is you got to do." And I picked up the phone and I called you and I said, "Hey, Chris, what's up?" And he said, "Hey, what's going on?" I'm like, "So you want to tape a podcast?" And you said, "About what?" I said, "Oh, I guess you didn't hear the news." And you said, "What news?" And I said, "Mike McCagnan just got fired." And there was a pause. And for a second, I thought maybe you dropped off the call. And then there was maniacal laughter. And you just said, "Oh, I thought Rich and I were making it up. I thought we were sowing division. I thought this was a fake story. I guess I was right about something. Go figure." And we both had a good laugh about it. And we talked about the breaking news of Mike McCagnan getting fired. So at that point, I think we were surprised that it happened because, as I said, they went through free agency. They went through the draft. We figured probably end of the season or something he would get fired. Instead, it's a few weeks after that initial report dropped. This was crazy. And it did speak to the power that Adam Gase wielded in the building at the time.
Yeah, it absolutely did. But yeah, and it is funny how many of these stories start with, like, you text me and I'm like, "What's going on?" Or like call and I'm like, "Huh, what's going on?" All this shows is how much I try to stay off Twitter in between doing stuff. But yeah, it was so how it ended up playing out was basically when Pauline Lombardi first sent that out. Like, the decision was already made at the time. Mike McCagnan was going to be fired. But it was too late in the process. When Adam Gase brought this to the Johnsons and started it, they were getting ready for the draft. They couldn't just fire the GM and hire a new GM, like, a week before the draft. It was too late. It was all right. We're going to have to, we agree with you. We're going to have to fire him, but we can't do anything about this now. And we need to go ahead and do that. And then after that, the draft played out. It was still okay. They are definitely going to fire him, but you know, teams, you don't want to fire, an owner doesn't want to fire a GM a couple weeks after the draft. That looks really bad. He doesn't want to do it. But it became quickly apparent that the situation was untenable. There was no way that they could keep going on like that. So they just had to go ahead and make the decision to fire him at that point where they did before that season even started, and then to go and start the process of the GM. And then, of course, what helped them doing that was knowing that there was somebody like Joe Douglas out there. From everything I've gathered, it wasn't just hey, we're going to fire Mike McCagnan and we're going to hire Joe Douglas. It wasn't just that, but it was very apparent that they knew at least we have at least one super quality candidate that we can lean on here. And then they went through the process and they eventually settled on Joe Douglas as the guy. But it became quickly apparent that they weren't going to be able to stretch this any longer. They weren't going to be able to wait until, you know, the team was 2-6 or until something like that. There was just so much tension in the building, and McCagnan knew it was coming, and there was nothing productive could come out of keeping it that way. So they ultimately decided, okay, the time is now. It has to be done now. And so they pulled the ripcord at that point.
Chris, just to sum up everything, I know, again, that a lot of people don't like Rich Simini, but he's a really good writer, and I do think he's a good reporter, even though sometimes he can be frustrating because of his overt negativity and sarcasm. But you know what? You cover the Jets for this long, and that's going to happen from time to time. Here's what he wrote at the time. This cracked me up. The Jets turned their organization into a Game of Thrones episode, a classic power struggle in which Gase prevailed over Maccagnan. Gase, a losing coach with the Miami Dolphins, has ascended to the Iron Throne. Imagine that. No one other than the Jets wanted to hire him off the scrap heap, and now he's the king at One Jets Drive. I love this part, by the way, that he wrote right after that. Bend the knee for Adam Gase, king of the North Jersey, whisperer to quarterbacks, loser of many games, friend of Peyton Manning. That is just masterful. I'm sorry, it is.
That is brilliant. Honestly, and this is, and no disrespect at all to Samini, who has had a great career. That might be his finest work. And that is exceptional. Like, that tweet should win awards. That is an exceptional tweet. Oh my God, I have forgotten about just the absolute perfection of that tweet. That is great. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. It was one of those things that, like, in the moment we all felt it and watched it unfold, and we're like, this is all crazy. But like, To go back, now we're a couple years removed, and Adam Gase is gone as well, but that Joe Douglas is still here now. And just the everything about it is insane, just absolutely wild. And like, that, how did this happen in the NFL? But what I'll say is, this goes back to the Johnsons, because if you're a good owner of the NFL, you can't have something like this happen under your watch. You shouldn't have, Adam Gase shouldn't ever be hired. You shouldn't have to be firing the GM 3 months later. Like, this goes all back to the Johnsons here on this. They have to own that and wear that. They created the situation where something this wild was able to play out.
Chris, funny enough, Adam Gase immediately proved that he was a better general manager than Mike Maccagnan, because his first move after taking control on an interim basis until they went out and got Joe Douglas to agree to come here was to trade away Darren Lee for a 6th-round pick, which, quite frankly, is much more than he was worth. Correcting a Maccagnan mistake in picking Darren Lee at number 20 in the draft in 2016 in the first place. A terrible pick, and I know that a lot of people at the time thought that it was premature to give up on Lee, and why would you trade him for just the 6th rounder? Well, Adam Gase was wise there, because as we know, Lee went to Kansas City, barely even earned any playing time, and then completely washed out of the league. So Mike Maccagnan, one of his biggest mistakes, taking Darren Lee at number 20 in the draft, and then Adam Gase sort of fixed that mistake to the best of his ability right when he took over. As we said, he ascended the throne. His first move was probably the best move that he made in the time that he was here. It was all downhill after that. But as you said, Chris, at least he brought Joe Douglas here. Promising start for Joe Douglas, knock on wood. Hopefully he continues that upward trajectory that it looks like he's on. And maybe, as you said, for as disastrous as Adam Gase was during his time here, bringing Joe Douglas here and becoming the usurper and pushing out Mike Maccagnan could be the gift that he leaves and his ultimate legacy in terms of at least something positive that he did here for the Jets. Chris Nimbley, the very big deal, thank you so much for coming on and helping me tell the story of this insane behind-the-scenes battle that went on almost immediately upon Adam Gase arriving here. Again, as we said in the Sheldon Richardson-Brandon Marshall feud episode, something that had to be a unique experience. I don't recall anything like this ever happening as far as somebody who just got here being able to push out a general manager or somebody who is up above him. Had to be a wild time covering that, and now you know the nooks and crannies of everything. Make sure that you follow Chris on Twitter at CNimbley and at Jets Insider. Read his very big deal work at jetsinsider.com, and check out everything we're doing at playlikeajet.com. Also, check out our YouTube channel where Kayla Pace does her commentaries, Pace's playbook. Luke Grant has up a bunch of film reviews, including some of the new players on the team that the Jets drafted, Zach Wilson, both Michael Carters, Elijah Moore, And he's got a film review of the Rams offense and some things that the Jets could steal from them to implement into their 2021 offense. So make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. And give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.